Thank you, Rob. 720 WGN. It's a download. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Maceo Parker, a longtime saxophone player, sideman for James Brown. One of the members of the JBs. Like, if you're familiar at all with James Brown and the JBs, Pass the Peas, Monorail, Watergate, all those songs, this was Maceo partner. Blow your horn, Maceo! That's so great. Anyway, Maceo Parker's playing at the Promontory this Sunday, and we will talk to him in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, one thing that President Trump likes to throw in the media's face is that they got the election wrong, right? I mean, he says it all the time. They called it for Hillary, but Trump won. But if you were paying attention to comedian and writer Scott Dickers, you would have known that Trump was going to win from the get-go. Scott Dickers is an American comedy treasure. As one of the founders of the legendary satirical newspaper The Onion, Dickers' style and wit helped define satirical and political comedy in the 21st century. And Dickers wrote the book Trump's America, A Complete Loser's Guide, back in April 2016. So this is way before this was our current reality. Dickers has written several books. He's created a couple independent films. He lectures all over the country. He does his own Comedy Insider podcast, and he continues to work in partnership with The Onion. He was the founding editor-in-chief of that paper dating back to 1988, and Scott Dickers is my guest tonight at the big table. Scott, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It is funny. I mean, to think about you writing a book about Donald Trump before, I mean, April, I would assume you started writing this book before he was even the Republican, you know, candidate.
Yeah, we started working on it in August of 2015. And I want to tell you a little story about that. So it was part of this program at the Second City where I teach people how to write humor, prose humor. And it was the master class, and we needed a project. And I thought, why don't we do a book? We do a book about Donald Trump. And everybody's like, I don't know, Donald Trump, kind of a flash in the pan.
The businessman? The guy who does the ties?
No, he was running. He was,
he was already running.
He was in the race. I think he had just, I forget when he announced, June, July, something like that.
Yeah, right.
So managed to convince the team, like 20, 25 people, that we should do Donald Trump. Because I really felt like he was going places. I had done a little research on him, you know, read his books, sort of, you know. I was a big fan of Spy magazine in the 80s, and they really hit Trump hard. They were the first ones to call him a short-fingered vulgarian.
The first.
And it really stuck, and it really got under his skin to the point where, for years afterwards, whenever there was a picture of him where his hands were, you know, looked large, he would circle it. Circle the hand and send it to the editors of Spy magazine and say, see, you're wrong.
Come on.
I have normal sized hands. Now, this is true. If you talk to the founders and editors of Spy magazine, they will tell you this has been a decades long obsession of Donald Trump's to prove that his hands are not small. So the people who are always telling the small hands jokes know that that gets under his skin. So they're enjoying that needling. But I digress. So we decided to do this book on Donald Trump, and it was nerve-wracking at first because it was a lot of work, and it's an 8-week class. So I figured, well, you know, it's not that big of a commitment. We'll give it a shot, and we'll self-publish this book, and we'll see if it's still relevant by the time it comes out, if he hasn't dropped out or done something. Everybody thought he was going to do something crazy.
Yeah, right.
And he did do a lot of just crazy, outrageous things that would have disqualified any other candidate, but it just made his numbers get bigger.
Yeah.
And so the class project just spiraled out of control. And we were working on it obsessively for months after. And finally finished the book, you know, in the spring of 2016. And I took it to my agent and I said, hey, we got this book about Donald Trump. It's like full color, 200 pages. You know, it's a full guide to how to thrive and survive under Trump's America. And he took it out to the publishing companies and no bites. They're like, what are you talking about? Donald Trump's going to be gone by the summer. Like, what are you doing? To make matters worse, a publisher had approached me the year earlier and said, we got to do a book on Jeb Bush.
No.
Because he's going to be the nominee. And so I have a writing partner who we used to do a lot of George W. Bush humor when he was president. And I called him up and I said, hey, you want to do this one-off Jeb Bush book? It'll be fun. And we were like, yeah, let's do it. And so we did this book and it came out, I believe, the day he dropped out. And so they were, you know, the publishers were understandably nervous about committing to a Donald Trump book. So anyway, we self-published this book. It did really well.
Of course.
And then, yeah, of course, he gets the nomination, and then he gets elected president. And so now the publishers are calling and they're saying, oh, hey, by the way, could we buy that book from you? And so we signed a deal with Simon & Schuster. They're putting out the book, and it got a new title. It's no longer Trump's America, the Complete Loser's Guide.
Oh, what's the title now?
This is their title, you know, because I don't deal in cliches, but the publisher, they know best, and they control the cover. And everybody loves this cliche. I think it's the oldest Trump joke in the book, but you got to go with them, because this is more marketing than it is art. But it's Trump's America. Buy this book and Mexico will pay for it. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Amazon still has like 20 copies
of the Loser's
Guide. And they won't let Simon & Schuster put the new book
on Amazon.
So
interesting, because I looked it up to get the title. I looked it up off of Amazon, and that's what popped up, right?
Yeah, if you look up Trump's America, buy this book and Mexico will pay for it, which I'm holding in my hand. It's a, you know, brand new print, and it's a beautiful cover. It has an eagle with Trump's hair on it, which is very funny looking. But you can't find this book anywhere online, even though it's coming out in like 2 weeks. You have to You have to look for Trump's America, the Complete Loser's Guide, and
you have to buy all those up. We need to get those off of Amazon.
If I can convince your listeners, Justin, to just buy like 10, 20 books, it'll wipe out the self-published version.
And
I'll
make way for
the money. I'll give you a little incentive, too. The self-published version is the uncensored version.
This is censored.
When we went to Simon & Schuster, they wanted to take out the picture of the penis. The first penis.
Because Simon & Schuster does not do first penises.
They don't deal in presidential penises. The copy is still in there. But they said no. Go on the photo.
So, I mean, for you, when you were starting this project, I mean, it was a comedy class.
Yeah.
It was was the idea, I mean, to mock, to satirize Donald Trump? I mean, what was it at the time? I mean, it's so obviously because, as you mentioned, I mean, he's been sort of satirized and poked fun at since the 80s in Spy Magazine.
Exactly.
I mean, was your obsession with Donald Trump reading his stuff about that, the idea that he's just such an interesting guy for comedy, or was it a little bit more?
No, he's a hard guy for comedy because in comedy, generally, you want a straight man so you can be funny about that person. So George W. Bush is perfect because he takes himself seriously most of the time, and he's just a great foil. And you think of any, you know, Richard Nixon is classic. Trump, you know, is funny. He's a good performer, and he's just a walking, breathing hyperbole. So it's really hard. It takes a lot of finesse to ring jokes out of Donald Trump that are truly unique and funny and that really work. So no, what did it for me about Trump was I felt like whenever I'm looking at satirizing something, I look at, well, what needs to be satirized? What's out there that nobody's commenting on that's like the elephant in the room? So when The Onion came about in 1988, the elephant in the room was, oh my God, what's happening to journalism? Journalism was turning into infotainment. USA Today was this big danger that had come out that was like, oh my God, journalism now is just pictures and little nuggets of factoids. Where's the investigative reporting? You know, and the irony of ironies is now USA Today is like the only remaining legitimate newspaper in print, and they win Pulitzers for their investigative reporting. I don't think they've gotten any better. I think everybody else has gotten worse. But so The Onion was an attempt to, you know, make fun of the media or expose the media, at least the mainstream print media, for being biased and being elitist and everything else that, you know, we don't like the print media for. And when Trump was running for president, I believed that he was tapping into a vein. He was not running as a Republican. He wasn't running as a Democrat. He was running as a right-wing populist, which was very unusual. And in America, you rarely see that. I think Andrew Jackson was the last person to get away with that. You get a lot of left-wing populists, like FDR or, you know, Huey Long and these sorts of people. And I knew that he was going to find some purchase among the American public with that. So I knew he was going to get somewhere. And everybody who had been following the Republican Party up to that point knew that, you know, with things like the Tea Party coming into the fore and really having its heyday in, what was that last election, 2014? They really ascended. Something like Trump was inevitable. They had bred the party faithful for this moment. And it just seemed like, okay, this is something in politics that's happening. It's real. It's big. And it needs to be satirized.
Scott Dickers is the man to do it, the founding editor-in-chief of The Onion, dating all the way back to 1988. His book, Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide, is still on Amazon. But then the new book, which is coming out in Simon & Schuster, Trump's America, buy this book and Mexico will pay for it. You can find that once we get rid of the Complete Loser's Guide. Scott Dickers, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. In studio with me tonight, Scott Dickers, the longtime, the founding editor-in-chief of The Onion, which is now here in Chicago. But, you know, it's great. I mean, as obviously we've talked a lot about what you're doing now. And there's part of me, the comedy geek in me, I want to be a fly on the wall. 1988 Madison, Wisconsin. As The Onion, as you talked about right before the break, this idea that, you know, you're sort of satirizing media. You're satirizing newspapers. What had it become? How does that come about? I mean, how does a Scott Dickers come to a project like that? Take us through how you actually thought to not only satirize the media, but to bring together the comedic minds that put this together.
Yeah, well, it was all very much by accident, really. I was a cartoonist in Madison. I had a really successful comic strip in the college newspaper that I was self-syndicating to other college newspapers, and I put out T-shirts and books, and I was actually making a living as a cartoonist. Fresh out of college. And so I was kind of like a local celebrity, a local comedy celebrity in Madison. And I was approached by these two very enterprising young guys named Tim and Chris, one of whom had worked at the newspaper on campus where my comic strip ran, and the other was a buddy of his. And they were just really sharp, really smart business guys. And they had this crazy idea of starting a humor magazine. And they wanted me involved. And I just jumped right in. I thought, great, yeah, that sounds fantastic. My comic strip was essentially stick figures, so it took me half an hour to do a month's worth of strips. So I did not have, I had plenty of time on my hands, and it takes a lot of time to put out a weekly newspaper. So we went to a printer and we got a quote on, you know, printing a humor magazine. You know, that's what humor was then.
Right.
It was a magazine. Glossy, well, full color.
Yeah, you
cover.
I mean, you mentioned Spy Magazine. National Lampoon's, big one, yeah.
No, yeah, nobody had ever heard of a humor newspaper before. And that wasn't our thought. Our thought was, you know, a magazine. So we got the quote back, and it was like, it's going to cost you $6,000 per issue to print this magazine. And we're like, okay, well, all right, what's the cheapest kind of paper that you could possibly print on? And they said newsprint. And we're like, ah, really? That would look kind of crappy. Okay, well, I guess we can work with that. Well, we'll make it a fake newspaper. And that's what we did. And so we came up with this name, The Onion, because it just seemed like a great name for a newspaper, because you like peel back the layers to get at the facts. Mm-hmm. And nobody had used it. It was like this perfect name, like the Beacon or the Herald or, you know, any of these other great newspaper names. Why no one ever used it, I have no idea. I think it's awesome. And of course, now no one can. The Onion has ruined it. We've staking claim to that. And so form follows function. Function follows form. When you're doing humor, your medium is part of the message. So if you're on newsprint, you should be a newspaper parody, and you should make fun of the news. You should make fun of newspapers. So, you know, I think I probably would have found a way to make fun of magazines if it had.
But in those early days, when you're talking about the guys that approached you, Tim and Chris, you said they're great business guys. You were a talent. You're a writer. You were making comic strips. How was it going around campus trying to find other people who would contribute to this? Were you doing all the heavy lifting and doing all the work at the beginning?
At first, I was doing a lot of work. Tim and Chris were very creatively talented as well. And Tim especially had really brilliant ideas about satirizing the news. His family was in the news business. And so they wrote a lot of the content. I wrote a lot of the content. And eventually, I sort of became de facto editor as of like issue 3. And then after a few months of working for no pay, you know, this is all just totally like labor of love for pretty much everybody. Any advertising revenue that was made went straight into the printing. And it was run out of their dorm room, you know. But after a few months of helping them out like that, they sold it to me and two other people, a business guy and a computer guy. So we had the triad. The owners were the creative guy, the business guy, and the production guy. And then the business guy and I bought out the computer guy a couple of years later. So, yeah, so I was owner-editor of The Onion as of, you know, year 2 on, you know, for, you know, yeah, a decade and a half.
Yeah, and
that's when, you know, it really became The Onion. So, you know, yeah, we didn't really recruit people around town. People would come knocking on the door. They'd see the paper on the street. We'd distribute it for free in Madison. And people would just show up at the door and say, hey, I'd love to write for you guys.
Was at the early days, were you making Madison-specific jokes? I mean, was your audience specifically for campus, for kids, students in Wisconsin?
A little bit. We learned early on that it was much better to make fun of things that would be gettable outside of Madison. So that stuff, if we did do local Madison jokes, we made sure they were gettable to somebody in Timbuktu as well. So, but yeah, we made fun of, you know, the governor of Wisconsin. We got in trouble with him pretty early on. He threatened to sue us. So that was the beginning of long tradition of lawsuit threats.
My guest at the big table tonight, Scott Dickers. He is the founding editor-in-chief of The Onion. We're talking about the early days. And after the break, let's continue. You know, you guys have had such growth. I mean, it's amazing to even now. I mean, you're not with the company. You do things in partnership with it here in Chicago. But to think about The Onion as a newspaper and only a newspaper, it boggles the mind. But most people listening to WGN right now know exactly the Onion box, that you'd pull it out and grab the paper and you'd make sure to read it every time it came out, every Wednesday or Thursday, whatever it came out. Scott Dickers, my guest tonight at the big table. We'll take a break, get the news tonight. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Scott Dickers, the founding editor-in-chief, one of the founders and owners of The Onion, the great satirical newspaper, which is now a website. He's also the author of Trump's America, A Loser's Guide, which is now Trump's America. Buy this book and Mexico will pay for it. Just got a text, Scott, from someone who said there's only 19 of the Loser's Guides left on Amazon.
Somebody bought one. Great.
See? You're winning.
All right, Trump wins.
Trump wins.
Things connected with Trump win.
They just win.
That's how much of a winner he is. If you just put out a book that is about him, you will win.
You're absolutely right. There's a joy in our and laughter in what we say, but it seems to be that's the case as we see everything that breaks out. All right,
except in court. He doesn't win in court for whatever odd reason.
Not yet. Right?
Well, yeah, not yet.
Right. It's a long game. All right. So let's talk about, as we were talking about The Onion in Madison, Wisconsin, we've seen, you know, it change and move locations. One thing about, if we go back to just the format of the comedy, the idea of writing headlines, the idea of the routine of the paper, the you know, the people on the street and the way that you guys write. The one thing that I always found interesting is it's not written by Scott Dickers. It's not written by they're fake names, they're fake headlines. There's rarely ever a time that you actually know who is behind The Onion. Was that by design?
Absolutely. From day one, we wanted it to be mysterious. And because to parody a newspaper, part of what we're parodying is this idea that the truth is being handed down from on high, from the news tower, you know? And also we learned how not to do it from the humor magazines of the past. So you look at the National Lampoon, which had very high-profile writers like Doug Kenny and Mike O'Donohue who would put their name on things, John Hughes, and they would leave, and readers would start sending in letters. Oh, it's not funny anymore because so-and-so left or whatever.
Right.
And when the main people leave and there's a noticeable drop in quality, that really does hurt the brand. And then for the National Lampoon, like, their brand just went in the tank and died a slow, agonizing death over a few years.
You're absolutely right, because most of the talented people right. saw those names and they became stars of television and film.
So the mistake they made was they didn't make the brand the star. They made the writers the stars. And then the same thing happened with Spy Magazine. So Kurt Anderson and Graydon Carter, two brilliant guys, great writers, start this magazine that's a fantastic, funny magazine. And they both leave and sell the magazine to some idiot who bought it for, like, I don't know, $2 million. And it just goes in the toilet as soon as he buys it and they leave. I don't know. That whole thing is just a mystery. But everybody knew they left, and everybody can tell that the quality's different, partly because they left. But if they hadn't left and you didn't know, you probably would forgive a little bit of a quality dip. and you'd still be faithful to the brand.
And when you think of The Onion, and you think of now we're talking, I mean, 30 years, coming up on 30 years of production.
Yeah.
There's not one time where you go, wow, that really dipped. Because it is, you're right, the brand, it's the brand. It's always The Onion. It's always a funny headline. There really isn't a thought, well, when Scott was the editor, it was better. Maybe there is an
I notice, and if you talk to any other Onion editor, they'll tell you the same thing. When I was the editor, yeah, it was really fun. But no, so there are dips, and there's huge turnover. There are times, like when The Onion moved from New York to Chicago a few years ago, we lost like 80% of our staff. But nobody knows. Everybody just sees this consistent quality under this, you know, heading, The Onion. So we consciously made The Onion the star. And when I owned it and I was the editor, I could very well have called it Scott Dicker's The Onion. And I could have put my picture on the front page like Stan Lee. And I could have had a little column saying, hey, in this issue of The Onion, you're going to see some great stuff. Get ready to laugh, folks. And I could have been like a comedy celebrity. No different than Stan Lee, but that would have destroyed the parody. The parody only worked if it was this mysterious vessel of truth that was being delivered to the masses.
You know, the idea of the Onion going nationwide and take us into the early mid-90s when The Onion really took off. Were you surprised as the owner, as the editor, working with the volunteer staff and the people that you brought together at how much The Onion was resonating around? Like, what was the moment? Can you remember the moment when you're like, geez, this is actually a hit?
Yeah, that moment happened exactly between 1995 and 2012. That was that moment. So here's what happened. So they weren't volunteers. The writers did get paid. They got paid $5 a week to be writers for The Onion. And when it started to catch on, like when we went online in 1995 and we got reviewed in The New Yorker, it was like one of the big first, you know, oh, somebody recognized us. And Weird Al Yankovic discovered us in like 94 and thought it was great and was passing it around to his friends. And then Bob Odenkirk was literally stalking me to try to tell me how great The Onion was. And hey, I'm on the show called The Larry Sanders Show, and I'm working on the show for HBO called Mr. Show. You don't know who I am, but you're amazing, and you guys are awesome, and I want to come visit you. So before that, there was an eight-year period where we were just slaving in obscurity, putting out an issue every week. And so when this finally did start to happen, it was really more relief than anything else. It was like, oh my God, finally somebody's, you know, appreciating what we're doing. And, you know, what we were doing was pretty funny then, but we started slow like anybody, and we got our bearings and it got better and we tried to improve. Our whole thing was, let's try to make every issue funnier than the last.
Yeah.
So we really had this kind of Japanese management style driving the engine of our comedy. So yeah, when it did finally start to happen, it sort of felt like, okay, great. Finally. Now maybe we can talk about paying people a real salary. Now maybe we can, you know, expand, we can get a bigger office. So it was really relief more than anything else.
It's such an interesting, because, you know, but with those people you're talking about, the tastemakers, I mean, Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah, and Weird Al Yankovic, he's got like 2 million Twitter followers now, but this was before Twitter.
Yeah, but
he was a connector. He knew everybody in comedy.
Right. But there's something about the idea of this being the thing that the comedian likes and the respect that comes with that. I mean, going around and almost having a viral sensation before that was even a term.
Yeah.
You know, for people handing out newspapers and among, you know, the elites of comedy, there's got to be something. I mean, that's how do you keep that? And The Onion has been able to keep that. There's almost a way that's like, it still is considered, like, even though everybody knows The Onion, it's still considered a little bit, you know, underground. People, you know, there's how do you, and I know that you're not with the company now, but through those times, through those years, how do you maintain that sort of independence, that idea that you're not the mainstream comedy?
Well, it is part of the culture to continually improve. There are so many things about the company culture that you just can't rip those things out, because they are so deeply ingrained in The Onion's roots and lasted through its kind of rise to household name status. So no matter how many Univisions buy into it or how much money it makes or, you know, how many lawsuits it deflects, it's always going to have this core culture. You know, even no matter how much turnover there is in the staff, because there's a great tradition of apprenticeship there where people take a long time to like learn how to write the headlines and the stories and be slowly folded into the staff and stuff like that. So that culture of continual improvement and always making sure that we believe that we're telling the best joke about any given subject at that time and always trying to outdo ourselves and never repeating ourselves. And, you know, these things are just inextricable from the Onion's DNA.
Scott Dickers, the founding editor-in-chief and owner of the Onion, is my guest.
No longer owner.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the transition you've made away from the company. You still partner with the company in different roles. But Scott Dickers, my guest at the big table. Let's take our last break, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up. Scott Dickers with us. Stay with us. In studio with me tonight on the download, Scott Dickers, the founding editor-in-chief of The Onion. Back in those days in Madison, Wisconsin, 1988. He's also a longtime author. He has a podcast, the Comedy Insiders podcast. There's so many things that you do. I mean, you lecture, you speak around the country, colleges. You got the Trump book, Trump's America, The Loser's Guide, which is now Trump's America. buy this book and Mexico will pay for it. You know, you got a lot. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, thinking about The Onion, and I think about the election and I think about major events in American history in our generation, 9/11 being one. The Onion seems to be the thing 2 days after where everybody finally exhales. They come out. You came out after 2001, after 9/11 with, I think you won a tremendous amount of awards for what you did, making essentially mocking or satirizing what happened on 9/11, but in a way that the whole country could laugh. And the same with elections and what's happening now. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think about sort of the relationship between humor and what you guys do and humanity and the fact that you somehow cross over and are able to make people feel something at any given time?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything, you know, the Onion Writers Room, for all those years that I was there running it, was a place where you would have these philosophical, intellectual discussions. There's very little laughter. It's not like the Dick Van Dyke Writers Room on TV where people are cracking jokes or somebody, hey, I got a great idea, and somebody types it down. It's just not how it works. It's very sober and very contemplative. And we had just finished doing our first book before 9/11 happened, and it came out the previous year. It was called Our Dumb Century.
Yeah,
and
classic.
Look back at the 20th century through fake front pages of The Onion. And we learned a lot about, you know, that equation, comedy equals tragedy plus time, because we made fun of things like the Titanic in the book, and we could say anything we wanted. Nobody's offended. But then we got closer to current history. We did the Oklahoma City bombing in 1997, where Americans died, kids died, and it put it into context for us. Like, okay, what's going on here? This is really interesting. Why is it that you can't make fun of this, but you can make fun of that? And it wasn't about time. What we discovered was that time doesn't belong in that equation. Tragedy equals comedy. Comedy equals tragedy. Because we use laughter to heal from tragedy. That's one of the things, one of our coping mechanisms, to be able to laugh at ourselves or at something else or at the right target to make us feel better. Like people who've been at funerals or other times when they're not supposed to laugh, sometimes those are the most satisfying laughs. And so if you can tap those, that's really powerful.
You know, for you, you mentioned, you know, just sort of the idea throughout this interview, you talked about lawsuits and the idea that there are some targets that don't find your fake headlines funny.
That is
and
correct.
They will come after you. I mean, you've had some high-profile lawsuits in the time at The Onion, one from our president.
Well, I will say this. I don't believe we ever got sued. I was the creative guy, not the business guy, so for all I know, we did. But we got threatened a lot, and attorneys usually deflected it. So, yeah, the first president we got in trouble with was George W. Bush, who sent us a cease and desist letter because we were using the presidential seal on the Onion's website for this parody of the weekly radio address that we were doing. And apparently that was against the law. And we immediately sent it to the New York Times. And they did a big story about it, totally embarrassed him. They never came back. And it's now framed and hanging proudly in the Onion office. But yeah, recently, so this is 2012, the Onion ran a story about Donald Trump having a shriveled little penis, I think, something. You hit the guy where it hurts. That's where you hit him. And we got this really angry letter from an attorney saying that you can't make fun of Donald Trump. He is an important businessman. This is disgraceful. And you must pull the story immediately. And, you know, struck us as ridiculous, of course, not going to pull the story. Then years later, I think it was mid last year, you heard the story where Trump pretended to be a press agent.
Yeah.
And called People Magazine. And
that was
bragged.
A big thing. Yeah, right.
He made up this fake name, John Bannon or whatever. John Barron. Used his son's name. Like, that's weird. Anyway, I thought back to that letter and I'm thinking, wait a minute, that wasn't a lawyer. That was Donald Trump, because the language of the letter was, this is disgraceful. That's like one of his words. You know,
it's
disrespectful, yeah, disgraceful. Right. And it wasn't very well written. And it was like, okay, no, that was no lawyer. It was Donald Trump. And what happened was he followed up with that letter with phone calls. He was calling our CEO repeatedly, probably with the plug nose. This is not Donald Trump. And I am calling to demand that you do not make fun of my client, Donald Trump. And
wow.
So take from that what you will about our new president, but that is a true story.
He's good with voices. For you, I mean, as we wrap up here, we're running out of time, but I'm interested because Univision owns The Onion now. You work in partnership with them. You do the Second City Class that came up with this project, the book that we're talking about. But, you know, it's an amazing, I mean, it's just a juggernaut. It was just announced a couple weeks ago that there's a new film project in Hollywood that The Onion's going to be a film production company. It's, you know, whether it be what we see all the time on Facebook and social media or on the radio and the videos, there's so much going on.
And they have
TV
deals.
I mean, yeah. So much going on.
There's a lot going
for
on.
You,
they're making a ton of money.
Let me ask you this. Take us back to, I mean, when you think of what The Onion is today and what it means to American comedy, but also how lucrative it is. And you think back to those days in 1988 when you were a cartoonist saying, yeah, this sounds like fun. Newsprint's all we can afford. What's your thought? What's your reflection on where The Onion is today?
I mean, it's amazing. I look at it sort of like, you know, you have a child and they're this precious little delicate infant that would die if you dropped it. And then you feed it and you marinate it in love and care and attention. And you know, when it becomes an adult and it gets a job and it starts to do things out in the world and you just have this incredible welling sense of pride, but also this separation. It's like, okay, it's this thing now. It's this other thing. It's a very strange feeling. And also it doesn't love you back like a child. There's that. But it is truly amazing. Never imagined it. You know, early on, the biggest goal we had was we just wanted to be mentioned on an equal playing field with the Harvard Lampoon. We wanted to be respected like the college humor publication of record. And then once we started really getting big in the 90s and the idea was, oh, we could actually become a national humor publication, then the goals kind of ballooned from there and the sky was the limit.
Scott Dickers, the founding editor-in-chief, one-time owner of The Onion, talking about the early days in Madison, Wisconsin, 1988. Trump's America is the book. It used to be called Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide. Now it's Trump's America, Buy This Book, and Mexico Will Pay For It. That's going to be out in 2 weeks. Simon & Schuster is the new publisher. Scott, I can't thank you enough for coming in, and thanks for being my guest at the big table.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.